Hello, and welcome to the Matthew Clark Podcast, episode 3, where we sit down with the industry's key figures. Today, we will be talking to Nuno from Quinta dos Marques about his Portuguese wines from the Douro.
Good morning, Nuno. How's your visit to London been so far?
Good morning. I just arrived, so it's a short visit this time, but so far so good. Been some having some good times with Matthew Clark.
That's right. So we're here today to find out a bit about, and excuse my pronunciation, Quinta dos Marques.
Yes.
Obviously a really long history, and I think we're tracing you back to around 1770. But can you just give us some background of the family and how it was set up and what's happened since then?
Actually, it's the story, well, starts a little bit before of that. It started in 1714, or at least the first records. And it tells the story about the man that was coming from a town called Mursa, okay? And this was a nobleman that had lands where the estate is now. So, because of that, and because that man and that family went to Mursa, the estate started to be called Estate of the Mursas, of the people that were coming from the Mursa, okay? And that was back to the 1714. But then again, there was a... Well, the Douro was demarked in 1756, so some around 40 years later. And that was a big revolution, because with the demarcation of the Douro, it started to categorize and to elevate the region to produce better wines. So this specific estate was classified with letter A lands, so it had the conditions to make good wines already at that time.
Fantastic. So your history is a little bit shorter. You've been at the winery for around 10 months, coming up to your first anniversary. So it was a very steep learning curve when you start a new job. What's been the most interesting thing for you so far, and what are you looking forward to?
Well, I started in the industry actually 17 years ago with some other companies, and started in Espurão, which is the company that owns Quinta dos Mursas. Started 4 years ago. So before of that, before of being focused at the estates, I was managing European and Asian markets. When I started at the estates around 1 year ago, the challenge was to have a team that could, well, leverage the estate, meaning we did the work that took us around 8 years to understand what we had there. But we needed to, well, to understand where could we take it. So that was the challenge at the beginning. So for me, it was coming back a little bit back to the earth. It was starting to understand about the soils, then about the vines, then about the vinification, then about the wines and what we're making there. So at the end, from the soil to the wine, that was a big learning process for me.
Excellent. So you mentioned in that little explanation about Espereo taking over the estate, and obviously you worked for them before. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is they took over in 2008. What changes have there been since that takeover that you can explain to us?
It's well. First of all, the understanding of the past. Okay, so when we arrived there, we had to deal with this huge diversity. The estate was there since always, since 1714, but before of that. And people, and the estate is really at the heart of the Douro. So people were seeing the estate every day, but didn't have the perception that that, well, jewel for us was there. Okay, so we arrived there in 2008. And we had to understand the diversity that we had there, because, well, the estate has north-facing vineyards, south-facing, west- and east-facing, and it has an altitude between 100 and 400 meters high. And if you put on the top of that different types of soils, you understand that we're starting to have a complex talk. Then years of vines, then other indigenous grape varieties, and other variables. So at the end, what Spurão did was to understand that, respect the tradition. Then it started to change some agricultural practices, transforming the way we produce organic to organic, from conventional to organic. It also took us some time. Then the philosophy is quite simple, is to make the wines in the vineyards and to interfere as less as possible inside of the winery.
Excellent. So the quality of the wine is always at the forefront of your mind, obviously. So just taking that step back, as you explained, going back to the soil, if we look at the vineyards that you have situated on the right bank of the River Douro, you were talking about them yesterday being, rather than the terraces that we think of traditionally with Portugal, being steep slopes. I think 47 degrees was a number that you quoted. So that must be really stunning to stand there looking at that, where you're producing the vineyards. But what are the challenges that come with that?
Well, first of all, if you think about gradient, it's hard work for the men and women that work there. So it's tough. That's the first thing that you notice when you're there. It's 47 degrees. It's impressive. But when we look at the estate, 82% of the estate has vertical vineyards. So that means they're not terraces, as you mentioned. For us, that's very important, because there's reasons that make us believe that's better, because you have the original organic matter in the soils, for instance. You have a better sun exposure. You have less erosion. It helps us to be organic because it works like corridors for the winds. And because of that, we believe that we can make better wines.
Excellent. So moving from the soil into the vines itself, all of your wines really are made with indigenous Portuguese grape varieties, which are sometimes quite hard for people to understand. They're not Chardonnay, Sauvignon, etc. What would you say was special about these grapes? And just to get an idea, with the vineyards, say between 1 and 400 metres high, which areas produce better results for which grapes?
Well, first of all, about the grapes, they are the best grapes for that origin. Okay, they are the best grapes that adapt to that conditions. So that's the point. It wouldn't make any sense for us to have there other grapes. Some families had tested that, but for us it's about origin and it's about authenticity. Okay, so what we have there is also a diversity in terms we make things. For instance, we've spoke about yesterday about the field blends, and a field blend is very important because it remotes back again to the tradition, and it's having in the same parcel of lands more than 30 or 40 different grape varieties, and that brings more complexity into the speech. Okay. But if from our talks yesterday and some days prior to that, if you notice, we're more concerned about the profile of the wine, the final result, the experience, than speaking about the grapes. So generally, when we talk about Portuguese wines, we talk about a certain profile, not a specific grape variety. Of course, altitude brings more freshness into the team, but what we've done is that we've done a research that took us some years, and we have identified 8 different terroirs. And 8 different terroirs, it means also altitudes. Okay, so each terroir is a unity, has a unity. Okay, so a terroir that has 100 meters high makes more if it's south exposed, south facing vineyard, it brings more concentration into the wines. Okay. As you move higher, you'll have, well, you can have the same exposure, but you have more freshness. So what you have is more acidity. Okay. And that's exactly what we're doing with our wine. So each we work per parcel, per unity of terroir, and that is shown in wine. Even if the wine has the same vintage, same year, the same vinification process, you'll notice immediately, okay, you'll understand. So that's how we work. Like making a kind of a zoom, you know, with a camera. You're out, but you do a micro zoom into that vineyard and you understand precisely why that altitude gives you something to that wine.
Well, it certainly shows in the wines, but hopefully that explains how important the different patches and different plantings are. So in the UK at the moment, Portuguese wine it's not really a big fashionable thing, and I'm sure you'll see through the sales figures that, you know, it's that way. But we are seeing some growth, and I think the complexity that you've described is maybe what, you know, stops some people exploring. But what would you say would be the USP to get people to try these wines? You know, once they do try them, I think the wines really sing for themselves. So.
Well, I think the first issue is that Portugal is over-delivered for me, totally. If I look through ranges and if I do a tasting through, well, a blind tasting with key competitors, I think everybody noticed. So in a way, people are smart and people are also noticing that. Okay. Another thing is that we've been saying in Portugal that Portugal is going to be the next thing for some years now, so we still are on that. But I believe there's a work to be done from the side of the producers with local partners, with local people, well, to take the Portuguese wines into the next level. So also from our side as a producer, we need to be professional and to help local people to make their jobs. And then, again, people, common people that buy wine will notice that we are over-delivering.
And how can we tap into the UK market with these wines? Because I think you said they do over-deliver on what they are. It's just getting people to understand and get people to enjoy them.
Yeah, I think, saying over-deliver is not enough. Well, people will notice that we'll over-deliver after the tasting. So it's hard to sell Portuguese wines, as people that are listening know. But what we're doing there is that we are looking for authenticity and to innovate a little bit. And by innovation, I mean understand the past. Okay, and understand the past means less intervention inside of the winery. Okay, that for us it's a unique selling point. Because it's related with origin, with differentiation, and with that specific location. Okay, if the message is clear, it will take you almost there to that specific vineyard, and that's important for us. Then we expect, of course, after the tasting, for people to notice that we are over delivering.
Well, I think the opportunity that we had yesterday to taste through the range and the passion that you've shown for the product, if we can tap into that, it's certainly going to help us to portray that same to our customers. So one last question for you, really. I know you're quite new to the vineyards, to Quinta de Marcas, but what do you see the future being for Quinta de Marcas, respecting, obviously, the 3 centuries of history?
The future for us, it will be always to go deeper, understanding the tradition, okay, and to go deeper in terms of understanding the soils, what are the soils, understanding each parcel that we have there. I give you an idea from the 48 hectares that we have of vineyards, we make 50 vinifications. Okay. Also to understand what we have there. Then also in terms of future, what we see is that we don't want to be everywhere. We want to be and to have the right partners that can understand what we're doing there. So for us, it's a question of doing things right and deliver a message, and not try to be everywhere. Just that.
That's good. I think that puts us straight on the road to success. So, Nino, it just remains for me to say thank you very much for your time this morning. And again, thank you very much for your time and the tasting we had yesterday.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew Clark.
To find out more about the Quintilis Mergus range, visit the Matthew Clark website. And don't forget to join us next time, where we will be talking to Lucy from Accolade Wines.